This is episode 463 of the Anarchist News Podcast, a digest and or conversations on anarchist activity, ideas, and comments from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. This is for the week of April 11th through April 17th, 2026. What's new this week? Welcome to the Anarchist Stickers Archive from anarchiststickersarchive.org. A new site to give and get anarchist sticker designs. Unusual amount of detail about how to upload and download various kinds of information. Also, quote, it's not simply stickers that we design, publish, print, and paste. The stickers, but also different material we create, books, music, etc., are a live memory of the political struggles we face on a daily basis, how we see the problems, where we position ourselves, and what are the solutions we propose. Unquote.
Solidarity with the people of Cuba and our anarchist comrades. Do people actually pronounce it that way?
No.
Like, I hear a lot of people say comrades. And I'm like, what? From International of Anarchist Federations, participants in the 13th Congress of International of Anarchist Federations, held in Athens, briefly state their solidarity with Cuban anarchists who were unable to make it due to the U.S. Quote, the economic embargo against Cuba has been in place since the 1960s, but in recent months, USA has hardened its stance, imposing sanctions on ships carrying oil to the island and threatening tariffs against countries that supply it. Unquote.
From Caracas to Tehran with a stopover in Havana, from the Anarchist Library by Gustavo Rodriguez. One of my favorite current anarchist writers sets some context of U.S. business as usual, starting with the ousting of Noriega in the late 80s, but also referencing events in the 70s, and continuing to today, specifically the similarities between previous militarist international actions and ones that are happening today, all from a distinctly anarchist perspective. Quote, for those of us who have lived through much of this new century, it feels like we are experiencing déjà vu. That is, the intense and persistent sensation of having faced the same experience in the past, of reliving in real time something we have already lived through. Of course, this neuropsychological phenomenon often leads us to believe that history repeats itself. But history never repeats itself. Historical events never unfold the same way, although patterns, power structures, and even human behaviors tend to recur or exhibit striking similarities. The context always changes, even though the underlying dynamics persist. This often points to certain continuities, despite obvious differences in time, place, and actors, in the way wars, economic crises, or political transformations unfold. Circumstances and characters change, but the essence of events is recycled. Thus, in the midst of the 21st century, we are witnessing the remastering of the armed conflicts, economic crises, and political transformations that made history in the last century. However, today the context is terrifyingly different, thanks to the permanent revolution of technology, as Günter Anders put it. New technologies are shaking up not only markets, but also the geopolitical landscape. War, once again, demonstrates the mutual dependence between technological innovation and the machinery of war. Unquote. Always worth reading. Yes, it's long and there are footnotes. You can handle it. That was From Caracas to Tehran with a stopover.
Demos. Bad? From Montreal Counter Info. A very good set of reflections on what demos are good for and not. This is the kind of thoughtful piece I have come to expect from Montreal Counter Info. Here's just one of the useful points made. Quote, the critics of demos are careful to draw a distinction with riots. Of course we like riots. But they hardly engage with the reality that most riots in our context arise from demos. Rather than exploring the conditions that make it possible for demos to turn into riots and how anarchists could create them more often, they simply oppose the two forms, one being reformist, the other radical. And they ignore that many of the skills that allow anarchists to act with intention in riots are developed in demos, especially in a context like ours, where the latter frequently give rise to brief disruption and clashes with police. Communicating effectively within a crowd, accurately assessing threats and opportunities in a chaotic environment, street fighting, and dispersing safely are all much easier when it counts the most if you've already practiced these skills in somewhat lower intensity contexts. Unquote. That was Demos, bad? Read it for yourself and your friends.
Friday 1st, April 2026, Bulletin of the Kate Sharpley Library. From katesharpleylibrary.net, a detailed list of contents for this issue, which includes pieces on Marie Lacan, Louise Michel, Punk Spaces, Tony Grogan, Matt Sollett, etc. Also, a confusing use of quotation marks, but maybe that only bothers me.
Friday, May 1st, Global Call for Anarchist and Anti-Authoritarian Solidarity. From Autonomies, quote, May Day has always been a point of contention. As anarchist and radical movements lost and gained strength, so did the anarchistic rebellious spirit of May 1st. For years, May 1st was the day to display global revolutionary solidarity. Many of us remember what May Day used to be. Anarchist actions, parades, parties, and events everywhere. We would watch other actions around the world, take inspiration from them, and move forward. Unquote. A call to make May Day great again.
About the raids at the anarchist library Kalabalik and the wave of repression in Berlin, from Act for Freedom Now. A post from Germany that discusses repressive moves from the state that starts out with levity and ends with dedication. Quote, there are also a few things that happened during the raids that we think are worth mentioning. In the case of Kalabalik, right at the beginning of the raid, while the doors were still being cut open and before the cops' vehicles formed a barrier blocking the view, Julian Reichelt's lobotomized amateur Reichspropagandists from the news website Neus were present. While it is widely known that other tabloid rags have close ties to the political police, none of them were present at the outset of these events. It is now official, then, that the fascists in uniform are leaking information primarily to the fascists in propaganda roles, who, for the past months, have been lying in wait for people in an anti-Antifa fashion, publicly defaming them and harassing them at their homes. Unquote. We also note the confiscation of print material, like zines and books. Ends with a link to the Kalabalik Library.
Trial update on Comrade Komar in Surabaya, Chaos Star Case. From Dark Knights. A quick update on Komar, who has been rearrested. Quote, it is worth noting that during his trial in Bandung, Comrade Komar has already disclosed that his actions did not meet the criteria for criminal offenses. On Thursday, April 16, 2026, Comrade Komar will face his first hearing at the Surabaya District Court. Let us show solidarity for Komar and for all anarchist prisoners in Indonesia. Unquote.
Defense statement of Adit, anarchist prisoner in Chaos Star Case, from Dark Knights. This is a pretty amazing statement, I think. It ends with, quote, lastly, I only wish to say this. Quickly end all of this exhausting pretense. Deliver the duration of the sentence. And let me calmly live through the time you have taken from me in contemplation. Unquote. Most of this statement is a good example of reading the state for filth, which, when you get the opportunity, just saying.
Criminal or association. Charges dropped against one of three in Munich Zündlumpen case. From Act for Freedom Now. Another post out of Germany that discusses recent repression with a light touch. Of course, here the news is a little better. Focuses on some state official named Feruzi. Quote, contradicting all the judicial principles that the post-National Socialist German state relies on to legitimize its rule over land and people, Feruzi argued that the fact that nothing proves that the third accused had anything to do with the publication or distribution of Zündlumpen doesn't mean that he still couldn't have had something to do with Zündlumpen. It is unclear how General S.A. Feruzi got this job, since she seems to have slept through even the introductory lecture in law school, but this is of little interest to us. Unquote. Many links for readers interested in more background and specifics.
May Day and Anarchism from the Eclipse. The tagline for the site says, obscuring the far right with anti-authoritarian action. The relationship between May Day, the long-standing pagan celebration, and May Day as celebration of the workers is a tried and true topic around this time of year. Some anarchists trot it out like our version of Christmas tinsel at the bank or something. This one takes the bold stance of prioritizing working class slash state tactics and political action over a ritual that has lasted since before capitalism. Did I say bold? May have added an extra letter there. Anyway, this piece, apparently out of Britain, requests that we be more militant, please.
Report from the 13th IFA Congress, from the 3rd to the 5th of April 2026, Athens, Greece. From International of Anarchist Federations. It is a challenge to make any conference report back sound different from every other conference report back. The writers here have taken the stance that such effort isn't really necessary. Topics that were addressed were apparently anti-militarism, patriarchal violence, gender struggles, the far right and resistance to it, the quote-unquote plundering of nature, and so on. Seems like they could have used a few of the Germans who were writing for other topics this week, at least if they wanted to produce a text that didn't numb a reader's mind.
Porto Alegre for Sara and Sandro at the Italian Consulate for Act for Freedom Now. Very short. Here is the whole thing. Quote, the affinity we share and expand is in large part realized by our confrontation with power, which we communicate through actions, calls, responses, and reflections that spur us on to further action. That affinity also comes, and deeply so, from tenderness between comrades, which is one of the forces that drives us to act, so that they feel that in the anarchist struggle, we are here too. On the night of Sunday, the 5th of April, we left two names and a message beautifully painted on the doors of the Italian consulate in Porto Alegre, a territory in conflict with the Brazilian state. Sara and Sandro, our complicit nod to all those whom anarchy doesn't forget. Unquote.
Obituaries. Jean-Marc Renaud went to find out if God exists. From Blog YY by Yanis Yulantis et al. This is commentary by three different publications expressing sadness over the passing of author, atheist, publisher, etc. Renaud, and biographical info including a list of his publications. Quote, but he preferred to act. As early as the 1970s, he organized a Friends of the Earth group in Charente Maritime and demonstrated against the Blayais nuclear power plant. Later, he and the local FA group occupied the McDonald's in Rochefort and participated in the actions of GMO destroyers in his region. But it was in education that he made the greatest contribution, first through his writings, then by co-creating a self-managed daycare center, libertarian summer camps, that sounds horrible, and finally the Bonaventure School on the Ile de Liron. Unquote. Anon in the comments complains about levity. Predictable.
Audio and Video, The Life and Ideas of Johann Most with Tom Goyens from Final Straw Radio, an hour and 21 minutes. Quote, an interview with Tom Goyens, professor of history at Salisbury University and author of Johann Most, Life of a Radical, out last year from University of Illinois Press, speaking about the life and times of the atheist and propagandist, notably through his journal Freiheit, and his development from social democrat parliamentarian to socialist revolutionary to anarchist. For the chat, we talk about Most's life, development, and legacy from the mid-1800s in Bavaria up to his death in 1906. Unquote. History. German radicals. Freiheit was a big deal. And so on.
This is Chichi.
And Donnie fucking don't.
And this is the topic of the week. When to confront, what to confront, and not. Published on April 11, 2026.
So, someone says something outrageous at a party, like, sometimes snitching is okay. Or, if you don't have anything to hide, why worry about encryption? Or any of the other things that we forget people think who hangs out with them. But the question here is, what are the various interesting and creative and perhaps more useful ways to confront really stupid statements and or people? Many are trained on the see something, say something that law enforcement promotes. But when it is better to, for example, draw someone out so that they say all the stupid stuff they think, either A, so that they realize themselves they're not making sense, or the mutually exclusive B, so that people know where this person stands and not to plan anything fun with them. There have certainly been times when I've delayed a challenge to a friend or acquaintance because I knew I'd have better chances of being understood or getting through to a person in a different context, one-on-one, not surrounded by strangers. But maybe my eventual appeal to someone's understanding is not the kick in the butt that that person needed to really get the impact of what their comments imply. How do people learn? And how, and when, are you available to teach? And when are we teaching not the person who said something, but others in the room? And related questions. What have been your best, most considered interventions and or non-interventions?
Okay. Should I start?
Sure.
Well, I think that people learn it doesn't matter, like, there's no good way, no great way maybe of saying things to people in a way that they will understand and then changing their mind. When I was a young person, very, very young, like a teen, I believed that people were not anarchists because they had never heard about it. And I started talking about it with people, and I wrote a very cute and naive pamphlet, and I put it at the time there was still phone booths, so I put like some in each one of the phone booths because I thought people will just grab it and they will learn about anarchism and then everyone will become anarchists, yay. And then with time I learned, one, that's not true. A lot of people knew about anarchists, they just didn't agree with it. And another thing that I learned with time is that people, they just learn new things or changing their mind if they're open to it. Otherwise, it doesn't matter what you say to them. They might even agree with you. It might even be like your best argument ever. And next week they're saying like the same, they are repeating the same old shit they were before. Like, I remember one example of that with one of my coworkers when I was like on my 20s, and like I was debating the thing with prisons and punishment, and then something happened and I talked to her and I tried to bring like a more broad context and talking about what also brings people to do what they do and all these things, and she looked at me like as she was paying attention and was like, yeah, I never thought about it, that's interesting, and blah blah blah. And then next week she was making the same awful comment again, so then was okay, I did my best.
Yeah, I think there's different types of teaching. I'm very pro-teaching. I know it's controversial in anarchist circles because people think that folks have good ideas inherently baked into them or whatever, that workers don't need to be educated or that about their situation or that communities absent the state will revert to some sort of collectivism on their own or whatever. But I don't believe that. I watch people and I listen to people, and the U.S. I think is just one big example of how actually, like, when the state withdraws from areas left to their own devices, people form conservative little religious shitholes actually that like fetishize individuality. Individualism, and like attempt to reproduce capitalism as and property as best they can. Because the issue is that people need to be able to imagine other things. And also sometimes people don't have the information that they need to contextualize a thing that they're seeing. Or they just need like something a little bit reframed. Like a friend of mine, Whole Foods used to be a not entirely miserable place to work. But one of the things that they did to turn workers against each other was that bonuses were doled out on a department-by-department basis. And so if your department did well, then you might all get a bonus. And, you know, unexamined, a reasonable person would maybe want the other people in their department to work harder so that you would all get a bonus. And you might begrudge them not working hard, despite the fact that you're all making dog shit wages. You know, and so sometimes I do think people need something reframed for them. And similarly, like, we were watching a video recently where, I've been on a kick of one of those YouTube channels where people just walk around towns interviewing people, like small towns, that are either failing towns, you know, some shrinking towns or whatever. And they were interviewing these folks. And, you know, apropos nothing, barely even solicited, like, this town was shrinking and people were blaming the crime, you know, for everyone moving away. And then you find out from someone who's interviewed later that there was, like, a bunch of divestment from the town, right? Resources left the town. And then, of course, you're going to get crime at that point because people don't have what they need. And so it's like, okay, well, if a person thinks that crime is the reason that the town is failing, then their solutions are going to be very... If they think that crime was the initial ingredient that shifted the course of the town, then their solutions for that are going to be very different, right? Their solution might be just suppression of crime. But if they understand that crime actually followed other events, then they can go further upstream. And I don't think that any of these things are intuitive or baked into the human whatever, where workers or community members are going to intuit these things on their own.
Yeah, I don't think, so just to make it clear, I don't think that people cannot learn. And yeah, I of course, like, we are not born knowing everything, and we don't even learn everything by ourselves. Like, we have to exchange with other people, we have to listen, we have to think, we have to gather with what people did before us. So thinking, it's like always a collective process. Learning is always a collective process. But my point is, the person needs to be open to it. So I would like rephrase the question, not how you teach, but like how you open a person.
Yeah, because
how
you say,
crack a person.
Yeah, because I was gonna say I don't think open, not open is a static.
No, yeah, obviously yeah. It's not. I don't think. Yeah, people are open to some at some moments, and so I think that the trick here is like understanding when a person is like, and usually like something cracked on them, and something like on their world is out of place, and that's the crack you want to actually like try to bring something new, some new perspectives. That's when I think the person will be more likely to listen to new things, to actually listen to new things. Because what happens usually is like the person listen to whatever they want. You might be saying like, I like green fabric on the windows of a pink house, whatever. And then the person understands like, I like pink flowers in next to the door, and doesn't matter how many times you say that's not what you said, because people do listen to what they want to hear. They their our hearing, not they, like me too, I'm including myself. Our hearing is very selective, and that's why like communication and it's so is so hard, and especially, and I think it makes it harder through devices, electronic devices. I mean, there I have an example, like I when I was talking last time about the thing of the state being like the opposite of luxury, and there was a person that actually responded to that and said that I didn't understand or was naive. I don't remember, but and for me it's like actually the person didn't understand what I meant by that, and maybe they are not open to it, and that's okay. That maybe there will be a different moment in their lives, or maybe I didn't understand, you know. But the thing with, sorry, I know I'm blah, 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 but the thing is that also the problem is that sometimes people are opening to listen because of this thing that people just listen to what they want. And we need to find a crack, even within ourselves, like we need to find this crack. But the problem is that easily becomes like a dogma and like a religious way. And that's for me, like not teaching, like when you are convincing people of things, like indoctrination happens because you find a crack on a person, but then like that you tunnel it to just that. So the person is again like deaf to everything else. Like they are not listening, and everything they are looking at that thing and they are not looking around. And I still think that anarchists in general are the ones more open to other things, but it doesn't mean that anarchists cannot be dogmatic. Or that I cannot be dogmatic, because I know I'm talking here as if I'm the high priest of the... I'm not. I know I'm not. I'm talking about thinking about my experience, and I know that sometimes I need to... And that's an exercise that a person should always do with themselves. Like, always thinking, like, are you actually listening? Like, pay attention. Like, are you just, like, refusing that, or... denying that because you don't want to, because you're tunneled to something else? Are you not open to it? So it is a hard exercise to keep yourself open, and we not always succeed. But I think it is these two things: keeping yourself open and finding the cracks, or maybe provoking. I don't know how you would provoke a crack in a person. Would be interested in listening what people and jokes if you want about how you do that. Anyway, so yeah, that's I don't know if you want to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, I also think just like rapport and reputation and relationships are their own cracks sometimes. You know, I don't think a person necessarily needs to be in crisis. They just need to respect your perspectives on stuff. And usually one builds up by having good perspectives on stuff over time and delivering it in ways that are approachable. Yeah, I used to hitchhike a lot, and yeah, you know, I was very young and initially maybe approached it with the idea that I could like blow people's minds with ideas or whatever, and then pretty quickly realized that like no one actually wants like ideology from like a early 20 something that they just picked up on the side of the road. You just don't have the rapport, and so like pivoted pretty quickly to just finding out what I could learn from other people, and saving any propagandizing I was going to do for my own town or community.
Yeah, and I think it's also a process of learning, like going back to the indoctrination that we all are subject to sometimes. Like, because, yeah, sometimes you find that person or a few people that you really trust and you really... So you start sometimes just listening to them but not paying attention to other things, you know, that... I think there was a topic of the week that was discussing this with, like, mentoring and authority and that kind of things. And, yeah, so it's also, like, it's also a process, like, how you listen to these people but still open to other things. But, I mean, I really like this thing that you brought up. Even though, like, I'm saying this shit, I think it's an interesting take, this thing of, like, the relationship you create with a person, and that these relationships, they do open people to listen to or to be open to other perspectives. And it's not a one-way thing. It's when you... I think that's what... like being friends are, you know, you both are open and you can be frank with the other person, and you know that the other person will take that in consideration, like, even if they disagree with that, like, they won't just, like, shut down. And I mean, they can, we can, but usually a person who you created this kind of relationship, you don't need to agree with them, but you are going to take in consideration and think about it. So, yeah, that's... Thank you for reminding of the... Yeah, it's not... It doesn't need to be a crisis. But let's say, like, we are trying to show people that are... Like, we don't have this kind of relationship yet... I don't know, like, people at your work, that even if you create a relationship, there's sometimes certain things you don't say because, you know, you never know. So you better not share all the things. But you can still try to show some different perspectives. And I was thinking that another way you could do it, like, with examples, like, by examples and in a way, like, insisting, you know, like, doing or saying that thing, like, over and over again, like, maybe that would end up, like, opening a space to, like, if a person keeps, like, that, you know, if you are so insistent on that thing, maybe one person at least will start paying attention. Hey, this person has been saying or doing these things for so long. Like, what do they mean? I don't know. I think that could be a way of reaching people that are usually out of your close, reachable space.
Yeah. I mean, listening to a book recently... that talked about a lot of, like, workplace organizing in, like, the first half of the 20th century. And one of the things is, you know, they would always tell the salts, you know, the people who are there to organize, you know, you, like, be one of the best workers, you know, like, if you're trying to convince people that they can organize against the boss, you know, show them that you're competent. You know, and that you're not just trying to stir the pot because you suck at your job, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That, like, actually one could be good at this job and reliable and still have these critiques, you know?
Yeah.
And similarly, you know, unfortunately at work, the way that you show reliability is also by being good at your job.
Yeah.
Right, and people need to think that you're reliable, because if they think you're unreliable, then they will also not want to organize with you.
Yeah, also, because, yeah, you can also, like, if you're not reliable, like, it's easy to blame, like, oh, so actually this problem is, it's like the thing you were saying about the criminality, even though, like, you know, the problem is not the crime, but because it looks like, you know, like it looks like it is. It looks like it's the individual. It looks like it's the person, even though, like, even if that person is absolutely right and they have all, like, the right, between quotes, of doing whatever they're doing, like fucking up things at work, you know, it's not wrong, but yeah, it's like it kind of weaken your argument. That's
yeah.
Well, so if you're a so there is different strategies. So if you're a person that's trying to convince people with words, or I don't know, maybe you want to make your argument stronger by not, but it depends. It can also if you're trying to show by example, like, how that thing is not important, like how not wasting your life on a job, it's also a strategy. So it's not really like one. It's
yeah, no,
it depends on what what and how you want to do
it. It all depends on what you're working towards. I mean, yeah, if you're not trying to organize for better conditions at your job, and, you know, yeah, you just want to have a chill workplace where people feel like they don't have to bust their balls all the time, or you don't even care about the workplace, you just want to show people that they don't need to take things so seriously, then yeah, showing people that you can actually work half as hard and get away with it, you know, could be a really good approach to that, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely, hey. I've taken that approach at several jobs, you know.
Yeah, I think it really depends. Yeah, what kind of job do you have? I think usually the jobs that I feel that way about, I tend not to stay on them, because yeah, but if there is anything at all that you appreciate on your job, not because it's your job, but that you appreciate your work, the work you do there, that it's not appreciating your job, but appreciate the work you yourself do at your job, then you might want to, yeah, then you take a different approach, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the other things they were discussing in this article or question was, like public confrontation versus private calling in, or whatever you want to call it. And I think, yeah, I would say, I think in person, I feel like I'm usually communicating with the individual. I think anytime you're discoursing online, you're absolutely just performing for the people watching, which is a fine thing to do, you know. You're not going to convince the person you're arguing with, but there are other people watching for entertainment who may feel one way or another, or maybe not as far in your direction as you are, but fundamentally agrees with you, and you're, you know, helping to reinforce their perspective. I oftentimes, you know, like, I think, like, I always think of graffiti that mm-hmm. way. Like, I don't think graffiti convinces anyone of anything. I think graffiti is like a morale boost for people who already feel a way.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's, you know, it's show, it shows people who are already, you know, against ICE or Israel or some local police brutality or whatever, you know, that there's momentum with stuff going on, or that other people feel that way, you know. I don't think anyone sees graffiti against those things and switches their position. It's a like a building cohesion, building like a shared language.
Yeah.
Around. So I know, like when I'm watching or listening to like people argue over something, like what I'm looking, I generally already know who I agree with, and what I'm looking for is like helpful language to articulate the things that I like can't quite put words to, but have been struggling with for a while, you know?
Yeah. That reminds me, it's the person that wrote that posted was asking for examples. I remember, it's not like, it's the opposite example, but I think it's funny. Like, the other day I was telling you, I was on the bus, and there was these two ladies, and they were talking first about, like, I don't remember exactly, but it was something about the work context, and I was like, oh, that's interesting, I kind of agree with that. And like really soon they pivot to something about adrenochrome and babies being built for being eaten, and I was like, and then I put my headphones on again, and then when I remove it, they were talking about the situation in Gaza and Israel, and some of the points were interesting, like, you know, so it was not, but they were like, what I thought more about it was not so much the content they were talking about, but like I was talking, yeah, they are not talking to each other. They are talking for everybody else in this bus. But it's very interesting because, I mean, they were talking to each other, but I started just to trip on this. Like, they are actually talking to everybody else in the bus. They are trying to convince someone, and maybe someone is in a situation that they will actually listen to them, like somebody who's standing towards it, maybe it will be helpful, but like people like me or people who they would love to save or something, like they are looking at them and saying, these women are crazy, you know, this is fucking, I don't know, like it's like almost looks like out of a movie because it's surreal. But then I started thinking that, like, what we do on the podcasts, like, because we're talking to each other, but we're also talking to other people. Anyway, that was a trip, and it's a way of speaking in public that you are targeting, like you're targeting whoever is actually already has something. It's somebody who already has like an opening to that. Hopefully it's not somebody who already agrees with you, but like it's adding something different, some spice,
yeah,
for people to make whatever they want, but like make people think. I mean, I'm not saying that we do that, but I'm saying that would be a nice thing to do.
Yeah, well, and, you know, especially if what you're doing is organizing or trying to build something, like, we're at a point in history where a lot of people, again, like I was saying, like, may agree with 95% of where you're at, but A, either haven't figured out how to articulate that, because yeah, they haven't been exposed to the same things you have. And so, like, even, you know, 15 years ago or whatever, you know, I was in an Earth First chapter, and we were trying to, do anti-fracking stuff. And, you know, we had a discussion at some point about, like, oh, like, you know, we should be doing, like, informational events, and, you know, like, should we be, like, trying to, like, convince people in the area, you know, that that fracking is bad. And, you know, my perspective on it, and this, the point I advocated for, was I was like, we don't need to convince anyone that fracking is bad. I was like, there, or at least not yet, like, there are enough people that are already very against fracking, that our first priority just needs to be finding those people. You know, like, we should not waste our time trying to convince people who don't intuitively already grasp this, when there's thousands of people in our geographic area who are already on board with that, and the only thing we need to convince them of is that, like, Greenpeace is not going to do it for them. You know?
Yeah.
And so, like, I think we're at a stage in history. I mean, if you watch, like, just, like, the reaction to, like, Luigi Mangione, or, like, the, you know, public reactions to, like, that dude who threw the Molotov at Sam Altman's house and stuff like that, like, people are on board, and it's really just a matter of finding people. So I think sometimes when you're having conversations, you know, if they're public conversations, it's not even necessarily trying to
convince.
Yeah, convince. It's just being like, hey, I exist if anyone else also exists, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, and just kind of like putting the beacon out a lot of the time.
Yeah. I'm trying to think also, I'm trying to remember other situations, and I just remember of this thing of confronting or not confronting people. And I remember, like, there is, like, and you mentioned the Greenpeace thing, and that's why I remember this one, because there's always, like, those people from NGOs that take care of children. And I remember, I mean, and I always just walk past, but I remember once I was walking, like, I was just passing, and then the guy shouted at me, "You don't care about children?" And I was like, "I do, and that's why I don't care about this organization." And I remember the look at his face, because he was, like, so sure that he was going to convince me, like, to guilt me into something. And then, like, I made he wanted me to be the bad guy, and then I turned, and I hope it did something for him. I hope he went and did some research, or, you know, but that was a, I don't know if it had any effect, but it was really fun.
Yeah, during the big green scare era, whenever the Greenpeace folks would try to hit me up on the street, I would always just ask them, like, what they were doing to support, like, all the ELF prisoners. You know, and if I never leave, they were like, well, nothing. I was like, okay, well, like, that's, then what are you doing? You know?
Yes.
Just kind of turning it around on folks.
Yeah, that's turning things around on people is something that I still think it's worth it. Even if they don't listen to, I think it's a moment they might listen. You get them, like, unprepared, and so that's fun.
And to me, that's the other thing, right? Is that, like, people aren't wired to change their minds on stuff in the middle of a conversation. You want to, like, make your point respectfully, listen to theirs probably. And then, like, end that portion of the conversation so that they can, like, go home and chew on anything you said that might have actually, like, partially clicked, you know?
Yeah, that thing is for sure. If you just confront the person and say they're wrong, like, you be sure that you're not convincing them of anything. Yeah. They're shutting down. That's a good way of shutting somebody's ear down.
Yeah, I mean, even if you are being blunt or whatever, but it's just, like, just don't expect to get to the point where they say, like, my mind has been, right? Like, I'm like this, and lots of people I know are like this, where, like, you have an argument with them and they are, like, dug in and go to the fucking mat and die on whatever hill, et cetera, whatever other euphemisms there are. And you're like, man, that person is a brick wall. And then, like, 3 weeks later, you're, like, in some social situation with them and they are discussing it, but from the position that you had, you know, a month ago or whatever. And it's like, yeah, that person just needed time to, like, go home, chew on it, maybe do some of their own reading on the subject, you know, like, check maybe some of the stuff you were saying, or, like, whatever the thing is, I don't know, these days, like, it's like disappear down their own Wikipedia hole on it or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I think you can't really tell. So here's the thing. You can't really tell. That's a good point. When a person is open, I mean, sometimes you can have a guess, but you can't really tell. And that's true, like, and because I do that, I'm sure you do that. Sometimes you listen to something and your first reaction is like, no. And then you go home and then you think about it. And we never know when people are actually going to do that. So, yeah, for the person who posted, keep talking to people. you will reach someone. And And the, just to mention, I said I remember two situations. So that one, the turning around is the more fun one. But another one, and that I remember because of the ladies on the bus, that sometimes, like, so you see, like, I remember on the bus again, like, this guy seen, like, on the place I'm from, he was looking through the window and talking a lot of shit on two girls holding hands, how it was. And then I remember I just burst and start to yelling at him and saying, like, how he was this and that it didn't make, like, I don't remember what I said, but I'm sure I didn't change his mind. I'm sure, like, he just thought I was crazy. But I think my intent, like, the ladies, the right-wing ladies on the bus, the cuckoo ladies, was just, like, somebody will hear what I'm saying and maybe they will think about it. Yeah. And also, because sometimes you just are not going to be quiet about some things. You know, you're just, sometimes you don't. You can't. That person cannot feel that comfortable saying that kind of shit.
Right.
Like,
well, and
they need to know that somebody will yell at them.
Yeah. Well, and also I think, you know, that's a big part is, like, humans are very social animals. And so, like, oftentimes if people are saying something or doing something in public, it's because they want a particular type of response. And so, like, if you want to discourage that behavior by making sure that they don't get the response that they want and, in fact, get, like, an inverse... Like, when we used to... Like, when I was young, we were, like, animal rights activists, you know, and people would be like, well, you're not going to convince anyone to wear fur just by, like, shouting at every person wearing fur that you... You know, fur coat that you see on the train or whatever. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm definitely not going to convince them that, like, fur is bad, but, like, a person wearing, like, a $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, like, mink fur coat is wearing it in order to, like, have status. And so, like, if instead of having status, the thing that this is bringing to them is, like, verbal abuse in public on a regular basis, like, which is humiliating, right? I mean, it's bringing humiliation and, like, a level of fear, right? That's like, that will discourage them. And, you know, it's similar, right? Where it's like, if a dude, you know, makes a misogynistic joke, or a white person makes, like, a weird racist, right? The thing they're looking for is, like, a chuckle and a nod, you know? And,
yeah.
You know, there are a variety of different degrees of denying that to them or having it blow back in their face. You know,
yeah.
I mean...
Sometimes just a simple, like... I don't agree with that. I disagree with that. It's enough to make the person feel uncomfortable.
Or like a comic that people used to like and has since been pretty roundly canceled used to say, you know, like, his favorite response to, like, racist and sexist jokes was just, like, pretend that you don't get it and ask the person to explain it.
Yeah.
You know? Just be like, I don't get it. Yeah. but why is it funny? You know? And, and it's like, yeah, basically every joke of that nature really depends on not having to explain yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Because they sound awful if you... Anyway. So yeah, I think there's a lot of that kind of thing, right? Where that person might not say that again publicly because last time it was deeply embarrassing for them, you know?
Yeah.
And did not, right, achieve this goal of, like, creating a momentary bond with the stranger the way that they thought it was going to.
Yeah.
Not to get all, like, psychological, analytical, in, like, weird manipulating human psyche ways or whatever, but it's pretty baseline, I think.
Yeah. Okay, I'm good here. I have nothing to add more to this conversation, and
right.
It doesn't have really an end, but it doesn't need to have an end.
It's true, yeah. Let's go have dinner.
Okay.
All right. It's another one in the bag.
Okay.
Donny-go.
Chi-chi. Bye.
Out.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Rosinante. The What's New is written by Chisel, read by Chisel, and...
Copa Goblin.
We hope this podcast is useful to and fun for anarchists and the anarcho-curious.